Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You take a model man and put him in control.
It's the Mike Calton Show. It's 102.5 The Bone. Please go get Dave Mustaine and bring him in here. I don't have the information for the Ruth Eckert Hall of Fame.
Watch people's heads roll.
Thanks to the Google box, I can pull this up. The Hendrix Experience. Celebrate the music and legacy of Jimi Hendrix. 2019 tour is happening at Ruth Eckert Hall. There he is. What's up, buddy? How are you doing? Come on in, sit down, relax. Yeah, that's you, man. Headphones, the whole deal. You look great. I don't know if that's gay to say, but you do. I mean,
I'm gay.
I haven't seen you in a really long time. In person, and you look fantastic. We've had some rock stars walk in, and we go, "Eesh, jeez, look at that."
I'm eking on the inside.
You want to hear? Look, we start this off funny. You created a term in my life that nobody else will understand, and I never thought I'd have the opportunity to explain this to you. When I take my kids to the beach, I mustain them before they go to the beach. Uh-oh. The last time I saw you, you were playing a festival show at a rock station I was working at. Here in Florida, 110 degrees.
I think I remember.
It was livestock. It was a long time ago.
Yes.
And you were making your way to the stage. And first of all, this is also a great sign of, you know, the level of somebody's rock stardom if they have a person that slathers sunblock on them. Dave had to take off his shirt and some lovely lady put sunblock on because you're so fair skinned and being red hair and fair skin, you die out here without it.
Yeah,
he's the same way, Captain Irish over here. So, but it's just so funny is that was my like lasting vision of you, this woman, and I go, look at him. That's how you hope to achieve a point in life.
You've made
where some lovely lady slathers you. So whenever we go to the beach, I go, I have a young daughter. I go, don't just spray it, mustain it up, get them all nice, and, so you don't get a nice little coat like a little like a fried chicken under there.
I guess I won't tell you about the girl that puts the condoms on.
She also slathers, from what I understand.
No, very dumb.
Are you a single man or a married man?
Married. I was just kidding.
How long have you been married?
28 years yesterday.
Wow. Are you serious?
Yeah, I was able to celebrate our anniversary here in beautiful Florida.
And where do you meet her?
Megadeth is spelled wrong up there.
Oh, yeah. Well,
needs to go back to freaking school.
She's 100 years old. The last band.
Hooked on phonics worked for me, genius.
And where do you meet your wife? Is she a fan?
I met her in California. So she... I had a guy that was friends with our drummer, Nick Manza. Uh-huh. He was actually assistant for Steven Adler, the guy from Guns N' Roses, right? So back in the day, it was real popular for everybody to be using really hard drugs. So this guy had just come out of rehab, and he knew that I was sober. And he goes, would you mind coming with me to my first show? To just kind of be a mentor and help me out, you know. So I said, sure. So I go there, and I see my future dream come true. And I have my guy that's with me. And I said, hey, Juan, see that blonde over there? Go tell her I want to meet her. Mm-hmm. So he's really dark-complected and giant, beautiful white teeth. And he wanders across this place. And all of a sudden, I see these giant white teeth flashing in the dark. And I'm thinking either he's eating her or he's laughing hysterically, right? So I go, okay, I'm hoping it's the latter. And he comes up and he's smiling. And I said, what happened? And he goes, she said... you want to meet her, you need to go there yourself.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought, cool, Spice, I like that. And so I went up to her and I said, hi, I know who you are. And I was, okay. Apparently her friend was there, her roommate. They were out playing pool and she knew who I was and Pam did not. And it was great because, you know, we fell in love and we didn't have anything in common other than, you know, our attraction to one another. And
the love. And you don't want to marry... a hardcore groupie,
You know what I mean? So this works out perfect. Yes, you may
have so many examples of that in the music and the television and film industry, you know.
You never respect them on a level that you need to respect your wife.
Yeah. You know? But you notice how it's never really the huge female stars marry guy groupies.
No. I always ask female stars about that. Like, does that happen? Like, did Hart have a guy that goes out and...
I know Go-Go's had talked about it, where they did a lot of stuff. So they also did.
That was a lot of drug-induced sex with them.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I would imagine that we'd be very happy with that, I think, guys. We're dirty. So how hard is that to be an international celebrity and stay married for so long? I mean, that's a huge accomplishment in your business.
Well, you know, there has been, with, I think, any good marriage, there's been, you know, ups and downs.
Of course.
Because, you know, it's like there's old sayings that, you know, every time you melt down silver... stuff that floats to the top,
right.
It's kind of dross, it's bad stuff, and you purify it every time you melt the silver down, it gets more pure, and fire cleanses. And I think that, you know, with us, we've had, like I said, a spicy, fiery relationship, but, you know, I love her, and you know, I think if you don't work through the stuff, it's gonna become really big.
Yeah.
Things and I think people just give up on stuff when they give up on their marriages because it's an inconvenience.
Yeah, sometimes it's easier just to
to bail, you know. And I wasn't taught that. You know, I'm obviously, you know, from a different mindset from a lot of people.
Yeah.
And I believe that, you know, you don't stay in a marriage just because, you know, if you married somebody and you made vows and you're gonna, you really love that person, whether, you know, it's
fight it out. It's what you agreed to when you got married. Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. You have children?
Two that I know of.
How old?
27. Justice is 27, and Electra just turned 21.
At what age, I ask all the celebrities, at what age do they realize that you are cool and not just dad?
What's the date?
Yeah. That's what everybody says, too. Like, there's no, like, you got to imagine all your kids' friends were like, dude, first of all, your dad's got long hair, he shreds on the guitar, and we see him on TV and stuff and touring, and then the kids are like, that's what you get from it.
Well, I think that, you know, that's probably not a good idea to keep showing the picture of James either. That's not me.
What are you showing? Boy. Don't worry about that. Joey, just go back to what's live in the studio. Go ahead. Sorry.
Okay. I'm sure you'll be firing that guy later.
He's 100. He doesn't know who anybody is. So, what were you saying about your kids?
Well, I'm saying a lot of stuff about my kids. They're, you know, when you think about kids, a lot of times people, for me, I don't know why, but I had a really difficult upbringing, and I got through it, albeit on my own.
Yeah.
You know, I my mom moved out when I was really young, and I been living on my own since I was 15, which by today's standards is really, really young. That was 1976,
sure.
Living on my own.
Yeah.
And back then...
Where is this?
In Huntington Beach, California.
Okay.
I was a little surf punk. So, you know, already I pretty much didn't want to listen to anyone or anything. Because my mom was a Jehovah's Witness. And
is that why she left?
Yes.
Oh, she got culted up. And where's your dad? Was he not around?
My dad had passed away shortly after my mom moved out, and they were divorced. They got divorced when I was 4, and I got to see him every once in a while, but not as much as I really truly wanted to.
Right. So how do you survive on your own at 15? Are you working, or are you just kind of hopping couches?
This is why my mom moved out. I was selling pot. You know, I figured, okay, at that time, living at the beach, you're 15 years old, what skills do I have?
Right.
None, except for rolling joints, you know. So
can you play guitar yet at that age?
Just started.
Yeah, okay.
Just started. But, you know, I knew that something was happening.
Yeah.
And it wasn't long until I realized, probably around 18 was when it started to become clear to me that this is an option for me. Because I loved sports. I wanted to, you know, we were talking about the Grapefruit League down here. And when I was a kid, I loved baseball.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, what kid doesn't?
Who'd you like? Who was your California team? Or was it
I thought Johnny Bench was the coolest guy in the world.
Yeah.
And then Steve Yeager was the other guy because I wanted to be a catcher. The whole art of putting on all that armor. And when we would play, and my mom would tell me these terrible stories about how bad I was, that I would stand in front of the plate and I wouldn't let kids come past even if I didn't have the ball.
Right.
And the parents talked really badly about me. There's that Mustang kid again. And I thought, you know, we're not going to lose.
Yeah.
You know, you want to get here, you're going to have to fight for it. Because that's kind of my mentality at the time, you know, just if you want it, come and get it, but you better be prepared to fight for it.
Right,
and that's how I...
Well, you lived your life like that.
I wasn't really that old at the time, I hadn't been scarred that much. Yeah. But, you know, I'd already, from four to whatever that age was, no dad, you know, you're already scrapping on your own.
Right.
And my heart goes out to your listeners who are parents that are single parents or who are maybe younger, who have grown up and not had that role model, the male role model.
Sure.
For me, I didn't have the male role model. I had a surrogate role model from my brother-in-laws, who were both cops, which, believe it or not, did not affect me to be anti-authoritarian. I had...
Were they significantly older than you?
Yes.
Okay.
My two oldest sisters were probably... I can never remember their birthdays because we never really spent a lot of time together close because of the whole witness
sure.
thing. Birthdays weren't significant, so I really, you know, it's like looking at a tree. How old's a tree? Who the hell knows? they're probably going to hate the fact I compared him to a tree just now.
Yeah. An oak and a pine.
How old are you?
Yeah.
100 of a tree or a
turtle. Cut them in the half and count the rings.
Yeah, right.
So that was your figure was your like father figure became your brother in law.
Yeah, and you know they did. I thought really the best that they could. My oldest sister's husband was super cool. He was this guy from Lithuania, and he had become a motorcycle cop for the California Highway Patrol.
Oh,
and his beat was on Pacific Coast Highway, so he's all tanned and riding a Harley up and down the coast.
It's pretty good gig.
Writing tickets to poor girls in bikinis all day long.
Yeah. Home on the beach,
He would get up in the morning and just like creak down the hallway. With all that leather squeaking and stuff, and then he would start up his Harley, and the whole neighborhood would shake. And I thought, you know, who's going to say anything to this dude?
Yeah.
He's got a gun on, and he's starting up, and the whole neighborhood vibrates. But I thought that was really cool. And then the other brother-in-law was the chief of police in Stanton, which was cool for me because we used to go to this place called the Stanton Picture Palace, which was a theater that had these giant fans on the ceiling, and you could go in there and watch movies like the Jimi Hendrix thing that I'm doing right now.
Yeah.
I watched a lot of Hendrix performances in the Stanton Picture Palace.
Oh, really?
And what they would do is, like, you could go there and drink and smoke and do whatever you wanted to, and if the cops ever came in, of course, I had to get out of jail free card. My brother-in-law was the chief of police. But they would go, ladies and gentlemen, the authorities have entered the building, so as not to violate any smoking ordinances, please extinguish all lit, blah, blah, blah.
Give a nice little heads up.
And then all of a sudden, you'd watch, you know, above you, because you see the smoke through the light from the film and everything, and then it starts going up.
like, fade out.
A reverse exorcism, whatever. So, anyways, long story boring, I saw the Hendrix Rainbow Bridge flick there, and there was another, I can't remember the other performance that I saw that he did, but talk about amazing opportunity to do this Jimi Hendrix thing right now.
Had you played at the time before you saw the movies, or was that kind of like...
I was still really young. I was still just yeah. At that point, I just met my brother-in-law's little brother who was playing in a band, so I just was cutting my teeth.
How long before you realized that you were probably better than the average person playing? Like, you were like, oh, I got something here.
You know what? I got to tell you the craziest thing, like, even today. Last night when I was on stage with the other guitar players that are there, I have my doubts.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's good because it has...
Yeah, you don't want to get too...
I have a healthy respect for my instrument and my job, and I think that, when you take it for granted and you just think you're the greatest thing in the world, then, you know, it's time to get a little attitude adjustment.
Yeah. Well, you could see all the guys who that kicked in the ass from having that attitude over the years.
That, and there's so many great new players right now. The problem is you can sit in your room and shred your tail off on YouTube videos, but, you know, how do you find the other guys that have the same vision that you do or the same kind of dedication that you do, and can any of you write a song? Because, you know what, we all can listen to some guy burn up a fretboard, but you know what, when you're driving down the road and you're tapping it out on the steering wheel, is it or is it something like you know, and you're okay, I've got something to drive to, you know.
Let me tell everybody about this show. It's happening at Ruth Eckert Hall. It's the Experience Hendrix, and in addition to Dave Mustaine, you want to see why you'd be doubting yourself up there. You got Joe Satriani, you got Johnny Lang, you got Dweezil Zappa, Eric John. I got to be honest. I can't imagine how much this cost to put this show together just from the list of people that are on there. Zach Wilde, Doug Pinnick from King's X.
Yeah.
There's a whole bunch of Kenny Aronoff playing the drums with you guys. Mm-hmm. So that's a huge.
The drummer from the Fabulous Thunderbirds is playing with me, Chris.
Oh, okay.
I can't remember his last name. I just met him, but
Chris Layton.
He's awesome. He's a cool guy.
Yeah.
And that whole Stevie Ray Vaughan, Jimmy Vaughan connection with that Austin stuff. We were talking, and I said, "Where are you from?" And he goes, "Austin." And I'm like, "You were just down there 30 years ago crawling around all the barbecued restaurants trying to see if anybody knew where Eric Johnson lived and where Stevie Ray Vaughan was from." Because I loved listening to that stuff. Actually, the way I got turned on to that whole scene with the Vaughan brothers was through Gar and Chris. Gar Samuelson and Chris Poland, the first lineup of Megadeth. They loved those players. I was not really so much into the super guitar muso kind of guys. I liked Angus. I liked Michael Schenker. I liked what Glenn and KK were doing. I loved what was going on with Motorhead and the new wave of British heavy metal, Diamond Head, Fate, stuff like that. And a lot of those guitar players are more riff-oriented.
Yeah.
So going back to the part about, you know, sitting in your room and shredding, it can only get you so far.
Sure, but it's definitely a way to get noticed when you're out there on stage.
Right, right. The way I think that Jimmy got noticed, not to cut you off, but I will. The thing with Jimmy was he did, when you do a play, do you play at all?
I play bass.
Okay, great. Perfect.
I'm not very good.
That's okay, that's okay. Bass is one of those instruments that has its place. It's so important because it connects everything, and I think a lot of people they discredit bass players, because when you think of bass players, you usually think of the dude from the Monkees, right? You know,
you don't
think of like Sting or Lemmy, or you don't think of, you know, other people like Steve Harris or Getty or you know, Paul McCartney. Those are the five greatest bass players I know. God, what was I talking about? How did I get down this path here?
I don't know, but you know, I do this all the time. Then Galvin has to walk me back 5 minutes.
Yeah, what were we just talking about before the bass player?
You were
thing.
Saying about Jimmy.
Yeah.
And then,
okay. Yeah, right. So the bass player. Sorry, thank you for that. freshen up. So Jimmy does this thing where, like with three-piece, if you know, and sometimes four-pieces if you have a frontman that doesn't play an instrument.
Right.
When there's only three instruments, guitar, bass, drums, when the rhythm stops and the guitar player goes into the lead, that's when all bets are off.
Yeah.
You know, that's when you can tell if the guitar player is a well-rounded player. And one of the things that Jimmy did that I've discovered that's really weird is he had really enormous hands. And I had the privilege, before I even knew this was going to happen, I went to this guy in San Diego who was very wealthy, and he invented some crazy electronic device, and he collected guitars. So I got to play Jimmy's V. And then I went to the Hard Rock Cafe in London, and they have a vault underneath there with guitars.
Real stuff, yeah.
And I played his other V. So he has two Vs that were those psychedelic paint job ones, and that's we have this really beautiful guitar we're debuting during the show of the Jimmy version of the guitar I play. So
the Jimmy version of the Dean Mustaine guitar.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
that's pretty cool.
It's really nice. So what Jimmy would do, he had this thing, which I like to do in Megadeth songs too, which is having a counterpoint bass part that moves against the guitar rhythms.
Okay.
So the guitar rhythm will be in one position and the bass will move either down or upward. And it changes everything. The riff stays the same, the bass root moves, so it changes the modality of the song. And Jimmy would play, like, for example, with one of the songs I'm doing is Fire. He's doing some chords with the four fingers on his right hand, and he's using his thumb over the top of the neck to hold the bass note.
Okay.
And in a song called Reckoning Day, I do the same thing where I play with my thumb hanging over the neck. And I don't know a lot of people that were doing that at the time, and I had forgotten that Jimmy had done it, and frankly I didn't know how to play Fire the right way.
Right.
You know, I was looking up some tablature, and one of the famous tab sites, it has the first few chords right there,
right.
Mistakes in it already. How can you screw that up? Oh my God. You know, so be careful what tab sites you go to out there, you young guitar players.
Yeah. When you're a bass player, the best thing to do is let your guitarist learn the song, and then he teaches you how to play.
That too. or his lotion latherer.
The Mustaine slather. Dave Mustaine is in the studio with us. The show is happening at Ruth Eckert Hall tonight at 7:30. You can go see the Experience Hendrix. Now, you got a couple other things going on. Now, tell me about the Megadeth beer.
Oh, that's been a huge success. We got involved in a company up in Canada, and we debuted the beer here in Florida at the World of Beer, and that was October 22nd, 2 years ago. So it's been fantastic. We've sold, when you total everything up, it's over 5.2 million 12-ounce bottles of beer.
Wow.
And that's about what we drank in my first band. And the beer has already, it's called a Saison, which is season.
Right.
And the monks in Belgium, when they would harvest, they would make a particular brew for the summertime when they harvested, which was the Saison brew. More refreshing, lighter, it got the job done. So when they said, did you want to try an IPA, I thought, God, that is such a tired, beat-down beer style. Everybody does an IPA.
You're not a hipster.
Right. Yeah. So when the opportunity came to do a Saison, I didn't know what it was, and I thought, let me try it. And it was fantastic. We've won 2 gold medals already with it. And so,
now but you don't drink, right?
I drink beer.
You do drink. Yeah. Okay, so you said sober. You mean from drugs? You don't do drugs
back then,
right? Back I got
then,
you.
Yeah.
So so you're able to drink now recreationally and not affect you. Good for you. So then you
I'm drinking now.
Yeah. you have say into what not just the name and the design, but you're actually picking the flavor and how it goes, and this way, if it's going to represent you, you want it to be
to an
legit.
Extent. See, yeah. I'm not a beer master.
Okay,
a meister, brewmaster, whatever. What I am is somebody who. When you drink, I like to drink for the effect.
Yeah.
And I just want to have a cold beer. I just want to be refreshed. I just want to chill out.
Right.
And if you have something that you're drinking and it's awful, you know, why?
Sure.
It's like, okay, here.
Mm-hmm. Drinking jet fuel to get a buzz.
Yeah. So what we did was we followed after the wisdom of these monks, and you know, they're out laboring in the fields during the summer months. Who better to know what the best beer is than beer makers,
right?
So that was something really easy for us to make a decision on. Now, the second beer we have is going to be coming out in a few months, and we found out there was so much weird stuff that took place during the making of this beer. You know,
like what?
13 has showed up in my life all over the place,
okay.
Right? So... We decided that we were going to use the word 13 somehow, the number 13 somehow.
Right.
And we turned all the numbers in and everything came back. So the bitterness chart, the IBU, is 1.9. The alcohol volume is 6.1. So 1961, that's my year I was born.
Oh, wow.
Right? And then the 13 came down to how many ingredients we have in the beer. There's 13 ingredients in the beer. So
things all kind of came together.
Yeah, it was really weird, all these 13s and the month and the year and the day and all that kind of stuff. And I think the most fabulous thing of all is that there's not a whole bunch of stuff in there to get the point across. And, you know, people loved the Tout Le Monde beer, obviously with the sales. That's an incredible amount of beer.
Yeah, sure.
And
obviously, your name... The name is only going to sell a certain amount. It's got to taste good in order to sell that
exactly,
amount of
money. Exactly, right. Yeah. The name will sell the first one. The taste will sell the second one.
Right.
So,
well, that's good that you're having success with that.
Yeah, and we this is how that all happened. When I got approached, I got to tell the story backwards a little bit. Somebody was making fun of metal guitar players, saying that, you know, they aren't really skilled. And I said, you know, the classical violinists of the past are the metal guitar players of today.
Sure. They shred back on the violin.
Right, right. You put a Flying V in Vivaldi's hands, and
I
can only imagine what that stuff would have sounded like, right? So I'm excited about, I should say VMNT. I get this notion to challenge this guy, and they said, you could never do it. And I said, watch me. Yeah. So I did 4 songs with the San Diego Symphony.
Oh,
we
wow.
did 2 Vivaldi tracks, and we did a Bach track and a Wagner track. And we wanted to have something that was going to be kind of like a social lubricant, but also help everybody kind of come together. And, you know, because you're going to have people that are subscribed to the symphony hall that are in tuxes most of the time and are going to show up for the first time in, like, leather.
Right.
And vice versa. You know, dudes that wear denim and leather all the time are going to go in a tux. You know,
sure.
They're going to the symphony.
You're gonna fit in, yeah.
Right, right. So we thought, what's the one thing we know everybody's going to really enjoy? And because beer was such a hit or miss thing, we thought, just let's get a wine, get a cab, something that's like a really nice blend everybody could like and everybody sure. can enjoy. And poof, it was gone. And we knew because I went in there and tasted it myself.
Yeah.
And I'm picky. You know, if it doesn't taste good, like I said earlier, if the beer doesn't taste good, I'm not going to drink it.
Yeah.
So the wine was a huge success. And then we got into making wine.
Yeah.
And we planted a vineyard at our house in Fallbrook. So that's ready to be harvested. It takes between 3 to 5 years for the grapes to fully mature.
By the way, that's the other sign that you're a rock star is when you have enough property to put a vineyard in.
Yeah. Well, so okay. So that was really interesting doing the wine, and it was fun for our family culturally because it's something that I wanted to leave for my kids.
Yeah.
You can only leave music for so long. You know, they get to experience it, but you know they didn't get that. You know, enjoyed it in every meal and blah blah blah.
Right.
So and I thought, you know, I don't drink wine during the day. Frankly, I don't drink wine a lot. But I thought, you know, what I
beer
would like to do would be to do a beer. And I talked to another company, and the guy goes, you know, we're all stoked and we're going to do this. And then a couple days later down the process, they go, well, you know, we don't like your politics. And
really?
Yeah, because people, they hear what I say sometimes and they take it out of context, or people will edit stuff out, or, you know, they'll say what I said, which I didn't really say.
And even if they disagree with you, if it's going to sell, if you're in the business of selling beer.
Here's what the guy said. He goes, beer and politics don't mix. I've been into, they've talked about sex, politics, and religion.
Oh, look at that one time Obama had the problem with the plumber guy. They went and had a beer.
Yeah.
Sit down and talk about a beer. That's the whole everything's been developed over sitting around drinking a couple of beers.
Yeah.
That's dumb. Well, good. And that's how you weed out the people you don't want to work with, and you move on to the right people.
Right. So we ended up going to Canada to this company up there, and it's called Unibrew. And Unibrew is out of Quebec, where there's this famous route that goes down into the States.
Okay.
So my father's side of the family had migrated from Europe through into Ohio. And so we have this connection where that area up there, we'd come in, and my last name's French. So the people at Unibrew said, we have to have everything, all the titles, have to have a connection back to paying homage to France.
Okay.
So that's why the first beer was called a Tout Le Monde.
Right.
And when you say the name only sells so much, that's true, because we have Megadeth kind of smaller than the words of Tout Le Monde. On this new beer, it's the reason that we chose to use numerals is because numerals are international.
Right,
and
that's true.
That's something that you're going to have to see for yourself and taste it for yourself.
Listen, I'm not opposed to sitting here and having a tasting live on the air one day. If you're just joining us, Dave Mustaine is in the studio with us, which is, I thank you for getting up early, because I would have been like,
welcome.
No, I'm already rich. I'm not getting up early. The show is happening at Ruth Eckert Hall tonight. You've been responsible for a lot of things, but this Dean Guitar, we're friends with Josh. Josh is in our band, and I've been over there to that factory and seen those guitars, and it's iconic to see you holding that V guitar, and I think that's great that you... that tonight that you'll have your special Hendrix model.
Mm.
I wish we could have seen, Josh, you failed us. I wish we could have seen one of those.
We made them very quickly.
Yeah. And then after this, how long does this tour last, this Hendrix thing?
Well, the Hendrix tour is, I believe it's 5 weeks. That's a total of 30 shows. I don't know the ending date.
And then what do you do when it's done? Do you do more Megadeth? Are you...
We're in the middle. Actually, I came out of the studio doing album 16 right now to do this. I was home writing the new record, which is coming along really well. And when this tour's over, I'll be heading back to the studio. And after that, we do Ozfest, or we do the tour with Ozzy.
You're back here in June. June 2nd. Now, how's Ozzy doing? Do we know?
I talked to Zach yesterday, and he said he's doing okay.
Okay, good.
So I didn't press things. I think that, you know, that's something that's personal and private.
Right.
And I think that Sharon's totally capable of disseminating information about Ozzy's health. I wish I could tell you, but I don't want to say something I don't know. I know
I'm pretty sure Ozzy's been out of it for the last 30 years, and this is his fifth life, sixth life. He'll be fine. He'll be back.
You know what? He's really a sweet man, and he's a hell of a performer.
Yeah.
And, you know, with what he's contributed to the metal world, and you know, I don't... People have their opinions of all of us. Ozzy's one of those guys, when I see him, I just have this feeling of just reverence and love and respect for him, you know?
I mean, you look at certain people, no matter how much you've achieved, like, they're kind of like, you know, they're so iconic, you have to give them that credit immediately when you see them. Right. It's the same way in any industry that you're in or that you love. There's always somebody who helped get you there, and I know exactly what you mean.
That you respect, and you know what's funny is that feeling how easy it is to show someone respect. Think about what it would be like if people kind of carried that attitude with them through the day.
Sure.
You know, and they weren't, you know, wearing all their problems and hardships on their forehead. You know, and had people they can confide in when things are going tough, and you know, we're able to share stuff instead of dumping stuff on people. That's why people don't want to listen to other people's crap.
It's just true. We got enough of our own crap. We don't need to hear other people's crap.
You've been whining about the same stuff for 10 years now. Either, you know, divorce or, you know, shut up.
16 albums. See, this will be the 16th one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Studio.
Question for you. Does it matter now that I don't know, like, if this comes out and it's the greatest Megadeth album of all time, radio is in such a weird state. Do you even care anymore about radio, or are you like, hey, we're going right to online, or you can buy our stuff? Like, how does that work for you now?
That's really hard to answer that, because, you know, the answer obviously is, you know, the whole relationship's bittersweet. I like the people, but the way that we have to operate within the parameters of the radio world, for the average listeners, they don't realize a lot of times that a lot of the music that you're heard, you know, it's part of the big wheel.
Right.
And that the DJs, the programmers don't necessarily feel that, you know, you need to hear Taylor Swift 500 times a day, you know.
But it's the way a machine works.
Yeah.
What's they're told to play. Mm-hmm. And
so I don't have a grudge for stations or people. I learned a pretty valuable lesson a long time ago about, you know, the power of somebody if they shut you out of a market, you know, and so for me, I look at it like this. If you have something good to say that's going to help somebody, then say it. If not, don't. And for me, with a lot of the stations, what they say musically is, you know, that's their message. That's like when I lived in California, down in San Diego, I'm the biggest musician down there, besides when Scott from STP was down there. You know, play us on the station down there.
Yeah.
Probably has something to do with me calling the head of the station fat, but, you know, she was. And she didn't play our music. I learned. Yeah. I learned my lesson. So, I mean, if you don't learn your lesson, then you know, that's on you. But so it was a cheap shot. I was hurt. You know, she had said something that they were going to add our single. They didn't. We made a deal with them. We would come and do an acoustic show. We did. They did not.
And then they didn't add it?
They didn't keep their part of the bargain. So naturally, you know, I think you said you have Irish in you. So, you know, I have that fiery temper. And when I found out, we went down there and that they did not keep their part of the bargain. It just kind of, you know, when you have something that's full and you bump it, sometimes stuff spills out.
Sure.
And I got bumped and fat came out.
Do you think... That you seem to me the kind of guy that's always a little full. Like, you're always, if you bump him, you're going to get it from him.
Not so much anymore.
Yeah.
I was in the beginning because I had a lot to say.
Yeah.
I was feeling that, for me, there's not a lot of people out there that were really sticking up for us. When I did the Democratic National Convention and I went to New York and represented us, at the time, you know, when people thought of heavy metal, you know, they thought about us in kind of a bad way.
Yeah.
You know, they thought about us kind of like we're the goofy guys you see in the videos on MTV making fun of us.
Yeah.
You know, and
they're all Warrant in the Cherry Pie days. Or worse.
So when I went to the convention up there and I started hitting the circuit, people were looking at me, wow.
How can he also be intelligent?
Yeah. Must be the glasses.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So that was really good for me because I stood up for us. And there, since that point, of course, that was in 1992, I was working with, again, the Democratic Convention. So for everyone who says that, you know, I'm a Republican, you know, I'm an independent. I wouldn't have worked with any one party if I was a member of a party. So I vote.
What? How dare you? But use your own brain to pick instead of siding with the party. Who do you think you are?
The divide and conquer mentality again. Yeah. But for me, I look at it like this: when I went there, my whole goal was to stick up for, you know, people and to. You know, I believe in protecting the underdog, you know, because that was me. You know, I was the latchkey kid. I was the guy that was getting the snot beat out of him in school. I was the guy that was picked last during the, you know, sizing up of teams.
And, right.
You know, that doesn't feel good. And it only happens a couple times. You know, you're playing dodgeball and you know, you tackle the guy that's at first base because they picked you last. They're going to go, okay, pick him first.
Your mom, is she alive?
No, she passed away.
Were you ever able to reconcile with her?
Yeah, totally.
Oh, you are.
I took her to Germany. Yeah, yeah. It was funny because, you know, fame is really crazy. I think it kind of reminded my mom that she was my mom, and the love a mother has for their child supersedes any kind of cult mentality. And I believe that the religion that my mom and my mom's side of the family subscribed to ruined our family. I believe that completely.
Was 100%. She able to get out of it, or did she kind of...
No, and they're, you know, they're still in it. Like my sister, Debbie, I'll say, because she's born 3 days after me, I'll call her up, I'll say happy birthday, and she goes, oh, okay, honey. Happy birthday.
Yeah, enjoy it. Yeah.
And Merry Christmas, too, damn it.
So when your mom, when you reconcile with your mom, see, did you go to therapy for that?
Well, I went to therapy, but it wasn't
for... Not for that. I mean, but the reason why I ask is that takes a lot of... Now I'm famous on my own. I'm 15. I'm on my own. I achieve a level of international stardom. I'd find her, too, just so I can give her the finger. But you went back and... We're able to, I mean, I guess if it's your mom, you feel a little bit different about it.
Yeah, there was a lot of stuff that led up to that. And again, if you're willing to work out your problems and not just throw the baby out with the bathwater,
right.
I think that it really helps. You know, the relationship was worth not ending because, you know, I didn't like the fact that my mom was getting pressured from people, peer pressure, ostracized by this religion when my mom, the only thing she had after she left my dad was these people.
Yeah.
You know? And then all of a sudden they say they're going to, you know, disfellowship you, which is the thing that they use when they banish
right.
you or disassociate you, which is another level of it. So, there was one time in particular that I knew that she had embraced this because she was telling me she was at a store and that she goes, I don't pay with cash anymore. And I said, why is that, Mom? She goes, I use my checkbook. And I said, she goes, because when I open up my checkbook, the boys that are bagging the groceries always see my last name. And they go, is that your son? And I say, yes, he is. And I thought, you know what?
That's a good feeling.
That is worth saying, let's push the reset button for anything. You know, just to see.
That's sweet to hear from her. You know, if you ever wondered how you're mother felt about you all these years, that's a good answer as to how she really feels.
Yeah, it was a good feeling. And then, like I said, I got to take her to Germany where she was born. And it was funny because coming around full circle, my niece, my sister Debbie's daughter, is serving in our armed forces over in South Korea right now. And I want to thank her personally for protecting us. And so she's getting sent. She's a military police officer with the dogs.
Right.
Which is, you know, if you can find a really cool gig working with
dogs
is really cool.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And some of those dogs, they have those Belgian, what are those?
Malinois.
Malinois. Yeah. Those are amazing. One of my best buddies was my bodyguard during the rest in peace years. He had got a canine beat in Las Vegas and had one of those dogs. And oh, they're so amazing.
Oh, we have a great sheriff here in Hillsborough County, and I got to go see the training facility and watch them train with the dogs. It's amazing.
They're
it's
so
amazing
smart.
How smart they are and how protective they are when people say they're part of the force. It's because
they
they've done so much work with them and been such a part of them.
Yeah, they are.
Tonight, Ruth Eckert Hall. You'll have experienced Hendrix. You'll get to see Dave Mustaine. You'll get to see a bunch of other great guitar players. And if you are a fan of Jimi Hendrix, these are the best guys to be playing that music for you, and it's the best, next best thing to actually getting to see Jimmy do it live. You got Megadeth, the second Megadeth beer coming out, the 16th album is in the works, and then you're back here on June 2nd with Ozzy right here in Tampa. Thank you so much for getting up early and coming.
You're welcome.
You're a super interesting guy. I'm glad for your success, and I'm really happy to, sorry about your mom. I think that you don't impress anybody else until you've impressed your parents. That's
for the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.